That's 203-333-9422 or toll free at 1-800-922-6060.
Welcome back to This Week with Ann Kirk and Vincent Caprio. And Vincent, we have one quick question for our guest, Stephen Waite, before we have him run out the door.
So, Steve, in 1979, we had 14% unemployment and the prime rate was at 21. The tax rate was at 70%. I had just graduated from Villanova University, and I, at that time, was still already reading The Economist and The Wall Street Journal, and it seemed like a pretty bleak future in 1979 and 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And now...
How's that compared to now?
How's it compared to now?
Well, who was elected president in 1980?
In November of 80, President Reagan.
Okay, oh, we're getting political.
Well,
go ahead.
We don't know, but the thing is I think our last caller made an important point, is there are things that we can do legally to encourage growth, but for some reason we've inherited, Washington has become, I think Steve hit it right on the nose, it's become a thing unto itself,
right?
And it's trying to preserve its own power.
When it's like its own industry and it's protecting itself.
These people are supposed to be working for us,
right?
Okay, we're the taxpayers.
You know, a number of Europeans at my conference last week took me aside and actually they said to me, Americans are brilliant people. They're persistent people, and you created capitalism. And they said, we don't understand why our government is not focused on the economy and why we are now derailed into side issues.
Right. Well, if you look at the makeup of the current administration, there are very few people there that understand the private sector. There are a lot of academics, a lot of career politicians. I mean, once you have career politicians in charge, I mean, what do you expect for the economy? We need people that know how to run businesses. We
right.
need people that understand economics.
Who've actually worked in the real world.
Do we really need more laws? You know, I
no.
don't think that's the answer. You know, we really need to get back to fundamentals in this country. And we need to ask, what policies promote growth? What policies promote job creation? What policies promote education, right? What policies promote trust? Those are the things that we need to get back to, some real simple things, I think.
And sort of let, because if you let people do
people
things,
will
they
the
will take care
done.
Of it themselves.
They will
yeah.
get
if
the
you
job,
get out of the way.
They will get the job. That's how this country was built. It was great.
Oh, no, I say that all the time. You know, my impression right. of government is that they should take care of the things that are well beyond
right,
my capability.
Right.
Yes, they have to do, like, defending the country. I
right,
can't really do
right.
that myself.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And I want them to go out after,
right.
you know, organized, you know,
right.
crime or deceit, which I can't. But, you know, get out of my day-to-day life and let me do
this. Do we want the Department of
this.
Motor Vehicles running our healthcare system?
Well,
I don't think so.
I say that all the time. I say the IRS.
Right.
No, I don't want them
think,
either.
No, we don't. Right, exactly.
Well,
Steve,
you want the IRS doing your healthcare?
Steve,
I don't think
we
so.
Definitely want you back after the election. We can talk about the future then.
I'm happy to come back, guys.
Okay.
I wish you all the best.
Steve, again, thank you. Stephen Waite. And if you want to read more about him, research the number 20.com. You'll find his bio there, and you can check out everything you ever want to know about Stephen. Maybe not, but almost. We're going to change directions just a little. We have Scott Livingston on the phone. He is our second guest tonight. He's the CEO of Livingston Securities. He's been working extensively in emerging technologies and nanotechnologies and on Wall Street. And Scott, are you there?
Yes. How are you doing, Ann?
Good, thanks. Nice to talk to you.
And you don't say hi to me anymore, my man?
How are you?
Excellent.
Good.
That's all right. Scott has his priorities right.
I know.
It's the Ann Carrick show, so you always get top billing.
No. We both equal billing.
Featuring Vince Caprio.
Equal billing. Come on.
So, Scott, I don't know if you got to listen to any of the show so far. We've been talking with Stephen about different things related to the economy, and we wanted to get some feedback from you. I mean, it's been in bad shape for quite some time, 2 years at least. You know, how is that affecting things from your standpoint on Wall Street with investors and your business?
Well, 2010 has been a tumultuous year in the markets, primarily because it's been quite slow and sideways. The market really hasn't done much one way or the other, you know, much more than going down to about 99, 9800 and then going up to about 10.5 and then going back and forth, just up until recently. September is officially the best. This is the best September for the market in 71 years for the Dow, and I think 56 for the S&P 500. I might have the numbers a little bit off there, but you know, the best in generations. And the real question is, how are we going to end up 2010? Because, you know, there may be some glimmers of hope for the overall markets, and, you know, perhaps that could be a sign of better days ahead for the economy, too.
Do you see some changes? Like, you know, I said 2 years ago is when things sort of headed downhill in a hurry. Do you see any changes from that until now? Or is it really just been the small ups and downs? Do you see any change in people's behavior, for example, as far as wanting to invest either in a company or with you?
I think... you know, the onset of the Great Depression, and you know, for the generations of people that are listening to our show right now, this is our Great Depression,
right?
Has definitely changed American behavior. I think if I was describing the body politic, the body investor, the average investor, wealthy, not wealthy, middle class, you know, uber wealthy. What I would say is everybody's really kind of hunkered down, figured out what they really are worth, you know, after the bloodshed, and then started to change their behavior more towards making sure that their kind of basic needs are taken care of and their most fundamental investments are taken care of. And then once that's done, people can start looking forward again. And I think we're probably two-thirds of the way through that retrenchment cycle in investor attitudes. And look, it can't go down forever, right? So maybe things are perking up.
Would you say yes, some signs of optimism? Are there a glimmer of hope?
I would say that the week before Labor Day, the answer would be very much different. It's amazing what a 10% run in the market can do. You know, we'll see if it's sustainable or not. But, you know, for the most part, things have been pretty slow on Wall Street and, you know, difficult on Wall Street for many.
I know that you sometimes help, unless I'm wrong here, but that you help companies who are looking for investors. Are you finding different ways of finding the right people, or is it the same thing, it's just a little harder?
Well, fortunately, I'm the CEO of a company that's focused on the nanotechnology revolution and on the emerging technologies of the day. And if you're not doing this, in my opinion, you're not doing what's important. The solutions to all of the problems that confront us, whether they be scarcity of resources, whether they be challenges in providing cost-effective and quality health care, whether they be rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, or so many other big, big problems, lie in nanotechnology and other advanced technologies. The breakthroughs that need to happen in order to make clean technologies and renewable energies and all of these wonderful things happen are happening. The breakthroughs are the discoveries are being made, and it takes quite a while to get those discoveries into the real world and into our daily lives. But those investments and scale up of those technologies and everything are happening as we speak. So over the long term, I'm very optimistic.
Great. Now, I always like to mention this for our audience. I am a bit of a historian. So we all know that the market, the Dow, broke 1,000 in 1972, and then it gave back to about 600 when I entered Villanova in 1975. And it was still under 1,000 when I exited Villanova in 1979. And then the Dow finally broke 1,000 in 1982. So we had a tremendous 25-year run from the fall of 82 till the fall of 2007. We went from 1,000 to 14,700. So in looking at this long term, like I like to, over a 30-year period, you said you're optimistic. Don't you think that America can have another run like this on Wall Street?
Certainly. I think that things happen in waves, both in the short term and the long term. And I think that the drivers of economic market growth over the long term have very much been found in, you know, population patterns, generational kind of lifestyles, that sort of thing. and the baby boom generation saving and investing and entering their peak earning years through the 80s and 90s was a tremendous driver of you know, investment capital and interest in the market. And, you know, as those baby boomers have gotten beat up recently and, you know, started to readjust some of their priorities perhaps towards, you know, more conservative lifestyles and that sort of thing over the last decade, we've seen a choppy market and, you know, really the market's rough period started in the early part of the 2000s and, you know, insatiable demand for fixed income. And so we may be halfway through that cycle, but there, you know, that generational cycle, certainly the decade of the 2000s could be thought of in many ways as a lost decade for the overall market or economy. But, you know, you have another huge generation that's just entering their earning years now, that is this millennial generation, Generation Y group. And so I think that over the long term, you know, we may still have some choppy years or a choppy period, but you know, those forces will come back and into a light again over the long term, certainly.
Do you really think that it's going to be a run like we've had before? Because a lot of people feel like it got very overinflated and that it was just a matter of time before that bubble burst and it came back down to something that was more realistic. I'm talking about the markets in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, financial engineering, leverage, black box trading, hedge funds.
I don't think anybody knows what you're talking about in the general public, but
you know,
go ahead.
We're trying to educate people.
Any way
there
to run an economy, is it?
Yeah, okay.
You know, we need to readjust our priorities from financial engineering to, you know, chemical engineering and mechanical engineering and physical engineering, and we need to make things and build things in this country. And so,
real objects or real things as opposed to numbers on pieces of paper that you're moving around.
Right. So is it so bad ultimately that, you know, that the leveraged mortgage boom crashed? You know, perhaps it's a good thing over the long term. Certainly, many people could say that they saw it coming. You know, what do I know about whether they saw it or not? I don't know.
No, I mean, what you mentioned is, you know, the great investor Peter Lynch, always back in the mid-'80s, said to a lot of baby boomers, if you use that product, then buy a stock in that product. But somewhere along the way, we got way away from that by 2005, where people are buying CMOs and CDOs, and as Ann says, don't get too technical here.
Yeah.
But no, unless you're going to explain what they are, that's
well,
all.
Well,
you know,
we can. I mean,
unfortunately,
if you like
a lot more into the average person's email inbox than they should.
But, you know, because part of the problem is, you know, you take somebody, I'm just using a round number. Say they have $100,000 in their IRA account, right, or the 401k, and everybody has told them, don't buy any equities. Well, and then they tell them, don't you know, the bonds are risky. So now they're in an IRA account in cash, and they're getting 0.7%.
Right.
Well, you know, eventually you got to make a decision on where you're going to put the money. And I'm not advocating, but you can't stay in cash the rest of your life if you're 45 or 50 years old, if you're going to work till you're 70 years old.
Well, you know, the other thing to think about is that we're all living longer, healthier lifestyles than ever before. You know, 60 is the new 40 and 80 is the new 60. And, you know, with the way technologies are going and the ability to control disease and diagnose disease, you know, 100 could be the new 60 someday. And so, you know, 70-year-old people need to invest for growth, too, because, you know, if you're a 70-year-old healthy person, you might be looking at another 20, 30 years of life.
And well, I was going to say, you probably have 20 years left, yeah.
Right. I mean, who knows? And so, you know, you got to be in the game.
See, something that a lot of times people forget is Kemp Roth was passed in 1980, and 1981 was the first year that people could invest into their own retirement accounts. Now, those people, that's what created the wave from 1,000 on the Dow to 14,000. Okay, so then there's the retrenchment. We went all the way down to 6,500. You got back to 10,000. But when you mentioned the Gen Y people, do you know to this day, only 25% of Americans have a retirement? have an IRA or a 401k. 75% of the people don't.
They have nothing.
They have nothing. But I have to say, these kids coming out of college, their parents that don't have them, they know when they get to be employed, they need to create this pension because they're not going to get the same rate on the Social Security. I mean, that is going to be dealt with eventually.
Well, I think people my age, some older and certainly younger, they all feel like, yeah, they're paying Social Security. They're paying in, but they're never going to see a penny of that coming back.
Right.
And most people don't work for the same company for their whole career like people used to. So there's not going to be a pension from a company. There's not going to be Social Security. So you're on your own. I mean, they got that message, like, I need to do something, and I'm on my own.
Listen to this. So could you imagine if we looked at 22-year-olds, right now, and for the next 20 years, if those 22-year-olds, if that increased to 50%, this would all that money would go into Wall Street. That's where the money would go.
Well, as long as Wall Street is handling it appropriately,
well,
I think that's
Wall
when
Street,
people
I mean,
got...
I don't mean equities. I mean, it's going to go into a financial institution.
Assets,
what's that?
Financial assets.
Yes.
Right. But I'm saying if people right now feel like that there were a lot of people who mishandled the money and it disappeared because they knew when they were doing it that they were doing something wrong. I think that's why people got so upset.
Yeah, well, the 401k,
not like
the
something 401k happened.
Has become a 201k.
Right.
Going to, you know,
or 101k.
But the new generation of workers, you know, say we get our unemployment rate down to 5% and we do bring in 20 million more people in the next 10 years that are employed, and if 50% of them open up 401k accounts, that's going to make a big difference.
Sure.
It's the next generation of investors.
Sure, yeah. Sure it will.
You know what? Let's take a really quick break, and we'll come back in.